mention, Mr. Hashem, we will. This is the last shiur in the current series. After this evening, we'll take a break for 3 weeks, and we'll meet again, Mr. Hashem, on the Monday of Parsha Shoftim, which is the 25th of August, the Erev Rosh Chodesh Elul. Until then, the parshas are there for us as individuals. Plenty there, needless to say. So tonight, at least, we have occasion to open Chumash Bamidbar, pardon me, Chumash Devarim. And Chumash Devarim is referred to in the rabbinic parlance as Mishnah Torah. The Torah itself never actually refers to Devarim as Mishnah Torah. The term Mishnah Torah features in Chumash Devarim. The Melech has a mitzvah to write what's called Mishnah Torah, because of it's Mishnah HaTorah, but the Gemara understands that means that he needs to write two Sifrei Torah. Mishnah as in Lechem Mishnah, twice. One, the normal Torah that everyone has, and secondly, his own Sefer Torah as a Melech. So Mishnah Torah, the way the Torah uses it, really refers to two Sifrei Torah. But Chazal already referred to Chumash Devarim as Mishnah Torah in a slightly different vein. And what is the meaning of the term Mishnah Torah as it applies to Chumash Devarim? Well, the common understanding, I believe, and indeed there are Rishonim who say this, is that Mishnah Torah also means double in the sense that largely Chumash Devarim is a chazara, is going over the mitzvahs of the Torah. Mishnah Torah. Now there is no doubt that there are many mitzvahs in Chumash Devarim which have already been mentioned in some form or another in the earlier four Chumashim. Quite so. But nonetheless, of course, in many of those cases, if not all of them, there will be new nuances and details and aspects. Eved Ivri has been mentioned in Parshas Mishpatim, but the Torah goes over in Chumash Devarim with added chidushim when you let him go. Ha'anik ta'anik lo, give him a parting gift, help him set himself up. But it is something of a generalization, because there are many mitzvahs which feature for the first time in Chumash Devarim. How many? Well, if you open up the Sefer HaChinuch, it's the easiest way to check, because he chronicles the mitzvahs according to the parshas. And Sefer Devarim takes him to mitzvah Tafyud Gimel, 413, which means that Sefer Devarim begins at 414 till 613. That's 200 mitzvahs, which is a lot. And these are new mitzvahs. It's not a small thing for something to be one of the Taryag mitzvahs. It's possible to find associations with some of them to earlier mitzvahs, but they can't be merely branches of earlier mitzvahs, otherwise they wouldn't be independent mitzvahs of 613. So there's a lot of new mitzvahs, and this is already beginning to test our understanding that Mishnah Torah is quote-unquote just a chazara of the earlier mitzvahs. Moreover, there's a very important discussion amongst the Tanaim, the rabbis of the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel specifically, as to how to understand the way in which the Torah was given. Specifically, when were the general principles given, when were the details given? It becomes famous through the opening Rashi of Parshas Bahar, Ma'inyin Shmita Etzel Har Sinai, just like Shmita with all its details, so to all the mitzvahs. That's the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva understands that all the mitzvahs were given, klalim and pratim, at Sinai. And then, v'nishnu ba'oel moed, they were said again in the Mishkan as we traveled away from Sinai throughout the years in the Midbar. V'nishtalshu ba'arvos moab. And on the plains of Moab, which is where Sefer Devarim is written, they were said a third time. Rabbi Yishmael argues, and Rabbi Shmuel understands, that the general principles were given at Sinai, the details were given in Oel Moed, and the whole thing was said again in Arvos Moab. So was the Torah said over by Moshe twice or three times? That's the famous machlokus. It doesn't seem to be a halachic machlokus, more a historic machlokus, although there are possibly halachic ramifications. But the point is, according to Rabbi Akiva, What is the trademark of Sefer Devarim? When they reached the plains of Moab, Moshe went over the Torah again. It's a chazara. Problem is, according to Rabbi Akiva, that's been happening for the last 38 years. The Nishnu, the second giving of the Torah, was in Ohel Moed. Avras Moav is Nishdalshu, that's the third time, so it should be called Shlishi Torah. The entire trademark of Sefer Devarim has already happened, according to Rabbi Akiva, before Devarim begins. This is the third time. And moreover, the Netziv notes, and if we keep a careful eye on things, that the idea that the Torah, it said a mitzvah before, but then it repeats it in order to bring out further aspects, you see it in Chumash Devarim. You do. But you also see it before Chumash Devarim. This notion of repeating mitzvahs to bring out details, additional details, it's in Chumash Shemos as well. If you look at the end of Parshas Kisisa, you will see what seems to be a repetition of many mitzvahs that were given 3 weeks earlier in Parshas Mishpatim. Shalosh Regalim, Basar Bechalav, the psukim almost read identically. In fact, they're both leanings for Pesach, because they have that much in common. It's only been 3 weeks, and it says it again, clearly to, again, express more details. But the point is, this phenomenon of repetition and elaboration, the Torah doesn't wait till Chumash Devarim to do this. It's already happening in Chumash Shemos. So, to sum up, and these are some of the questions of the Netziv, we see a lot of new in Chumash Devarim, a lot of repetition before Chumash Devarim, and all of this causes us to ponder, what then is the meaning of the term Mishneh Torah? Now, if we go back to Rabbi Akiva's understanding, once again, to be clear, it's mentioned a few places in the Gemara, the mitzvahs were given Ne'emru B'Sinai. Okay, that's number one. Number two, Nishnu B'Ohel Moed, repeated in the Mishkan throughout the years in the Midbar, and then the third time, Nishtalshu B'Arvos Moav, which is the final few months before we came into Eretz Canaan. Now, what is the simple meaning of this tracking of events? The Torah was given three times, first in Sinai, second in Mishkan, third in Ohel Moed. But there's a very simple question here. How long were we at Sinai for? A year, a little under a year, right from Shavuos until Iyar. Okay. That means that the Torah was given in its entirety over the course of a year. Then, Nishnu, said again in Ohel Moed. How long is the time called Ohel Moed? It's 38 years. It's from year 2 till year 40. So this is a bit unusual when we stop to think about it. Because the Torah that was capable of being given from fresh in the course of 1 year needed 38 years to be gone over again. I mean, that's a rather loose recall. It takes 38 times the amount of time it took to give over the whole thing to do chazara. And then the third time it took a few months. How come the middle time took so long? Moreover, if we look at Pasuk Hey, we will see clearly from the Torah itself that Chumash Devarim is not, again, quote-unquote, just a chazara of the earlier mitzvahs. Because Pasuk Hei says, Perek Aleph Pasuk Hei, Be'eva ha-Yardin, Be'eretz Moab, the plains of the Yardin, Ho'il Moshe began, Be'er Esa Torah Hazos. He began to explain the Torah. Explaining the Torah and reviewing the Torah are not the same thing. There is clearly and explicitly a new element in the way that Moshe is giving over the Torah, as is expressed explicitly by the Pasuk itself, Pasuk Hei. So what are we to make of all of this? And the Netziv has a very interesting approach to this. He has a very interesting approach to everything. And he begins by identifying for us three areas of Torah. There is the text of the Torah, the Psukim. There are the Halachas, which largely, certainly as a formulaically, the halachas are Torah Shebal Peh. And then, of course, there's a connection between the two. There's what's called medrash. And medrash, in the scientific sense, means the way that the halachas, for most of them are derived from the psukim, from the nuances and from the details. Actually, these three areas of Torah are the areas of Mikra, Mishnah, and Talmud. Mikra are the psukim, Mishnah are the halachas, and Talmud is the connection between the two, the background of the halacha and the roots within the psukim. And the order that Torah is meant to be taught, at least in pure terms, is laid out for us in the Mishnah, in Pirkei Avos, towards the end. Hu haya omer ben chomish lemikra, 5 years old to learn Mikra, then ben eser lemishnah, the age of 10 Mishnah, and then bechamesh esrei leTalmud. We do things slightly differently nowadays for various reasons, but the original way it was taught was for the first few years, just the psukim. Then, just the halachas, just the Mishnah. For them, the Mishnah was the Shulchan Aruch. That's the formulation of the halachas. And then, what is Talmud? To see how the two are connected. The Gemara will always begin its comment on a Mishnah that relates to halacha. Mino hanimili. How do we know this? Where does it come from? And then that will spawn further questions. Says the Netziv, a chiddush. But in his understanding, the three stages of Rabbi Akiva, namely Sinai, Ohel Moed, and the plains of Moab, are not saying the same things three times. It can't take 38 times as much to say it the second time. Rather, they correspond to these three areas of Torah. At Sinai, the Torah was said, Nemu, meaning the words of the Torah. And for over the course of a year, we got the whatever the text of the Torah that we had at that time. And we knew the psukim. And then from the psukim to the halacha, they're two separate things, at least initially. Nishnu. Nishnu, says the Netziv, is Miloshen Mishnah. In other words, it was the halachas which are the Mishnah of the Torah. As a lot of them. It takes a long time. It took us 38 years. By the time we had arrived at the plains of Moab, we knew the psukim from year 1. We knew the many, many halachas from years 2 through 39. And in year 40, we're ready for the third stage, which is, how do these two go together? We're ready for Talmud. We're ready for Nishtalshu, which is the third area of Torah. And that is why Pasuk Hei says that for the first time, in a sense, once the information of Torah, once the facts had been absorbed by us and were clear to us, at that point, Moshe began to explain. Ho'il Moshe be'eres ha-Torah hazos. What's the biur? What's the explanation? The explanation is, you know the psukim. You know the halachas. How does one lead to the other? Interestingly, the word be'er, in addition to meaning explanation, also is a wellspring. What is the be'er? What is the source of these mishnayos, so to speak, of these halachas? That was the final makkah b'patish, so to say, the final installment of the way that Moshe taught Torah. That's the chiddush of Sefer Devarim. And interestingly, this analysis is borne out by the Medrash in Shmos Rabbah, which adduces a pasuk from the Navi. The pasuk says, Ra'a vayisapra. He saw vayisapra, he told it over. Hechino, he prepared it, or established it. Gam chakara, and investigated it. Sapra, hechino, and chakara. He told it over, he prepared it, and he investigated. Says the Medrash Shmos Rabbah, each of these phrases refers to one of the stages of the giving of the Torah. Ra'a vayisapra, the telling over, says the Medrash, b'Sinai, because that's the telling over of the psukim. Hechina, he prepared and established, says the Medrash, that's Ohel Moed. Gam chakora, and the investigation, says the Medrash, is Arvos Moav. That's the Talmud, to investigate how each halacha comes from its source. And perhaps therefore, in this light, the word, if this is the chiddush of Chumash Devarim, we understand why it's called Mishnah Torah, Mishnah Torah is actually a fusion of the Mishnah and the Torah. The Torah are the Psukim and the Mishnah are the Halacha. So the Mishnah Torah puts the two together. That was the Chiddush of Sefer Tevar. So this is a very interesting approach and introduction, really, to what is happening in at least as the Torah is being given over in this way in Chumash Tevar. Now, I'd like to take us a bit further, actually, into Perek Beis. Much of Chumash Devarim, the opening, is not yet halachas. It's really retrospectives and tochacha quite a bit. And in Perek Beis, and Moshe has gone over the chet of the meraglim for reasons that I'm not yet understanding. The in-depth tochacha came for the meraglim before the chet ha'egel. Chet ha'egel will not be mentioned until Parshas Ekev. It's 2 weeks' time. First comes Chet HaMeraglim, even though chronologically it was second. Okay, that's something to look into. But in any case, Moshe has gone over the Chet HaMeraglim. Perhaps it's closer to the experience of the people that he's talking to. I mean, they're going in, their parents aren't going in, and this is why. And in Pasuk Tet Zayin, when Moshe has finished now, describing in great detail, actually, the events of Chet HaMeraglim, it says, "Vayehi kasher tamu kol anshe hamilchama lamus mikerav ha'am." When all of those people had died out, that's the parents of the people that he's talking to. That's the first generation in the Midbar. Vayedaber Hashem elai lemor. It was time to move on. Ata over hayom al gvul Moav. You're moving towards Moav, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives Moshe the strategy as to how to approach them, what to do, what not to do. And they move on. What's very interesting is that Rashi, quoting the Gemara, it's a Gemara in two places actually, in Maseches Tanis Daf Lamed and in Bava Basra Kuf Kaf Aleph, this is a turning point. It's a turning point not only for the Jewish people, it's a turning point for Moshe. Let us see what that means. Again, in Pasuk Tet Zayin, marks the time, stamps the time as the first generation had died out, the new generation is here, time to move on. Vayidaber Hashem Eli. Rashi comments, Aval, Mishiluach HaMeraglim Adkan, Lo Ne'emar Beparsha Vayidaber. You'll note, says Rashi, that after the first generation had died out and it's time to move in to Eretz Yisrael, then it says, Vayidaber Hashem Eli. Vayidaber Hashem spoke to me. In the intervening 38 years, from the time of the sending of the spies until this time, you will not find the word Vayidaber. Ela Vayomer. Okay. What's the difference between them? Wants to speak, wants to say. Lelamedcha Shekol Lamed Ches Shana. The entire 38 years, Shehayu Yisrael Nezufim, that the Jewish people were shunned. They were under censure. They were in a dark place. Lo nisyached imo hadibur b'loshen chiba panim apanim. When the Jewish people were in a difficult situation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't talk to Moshe in that the best possible way, the highest possible way. Loshen chiba panim apanim, that highest madrega, the yishuv hadas. Moshe's mode of communication from HaKadosh Baruch Hu was downgraded. The Jewish people went down, and Moshe's level of nevuah also goes down. We're just reading the words of the Rashi. She'ein ha-shechina shora ala nevi'im ela b'shvil Yisrael. The Shechina resides with the nevi'im for the sake of Bnei Yisrael, and therefore the level in which the Shechina communicates to the nevi'im parallels the level of Bnei Yisrael. It goes up and down with the Jewish people. And then says Moshe Rabbeinu, you were in a low place, and so was my Nevuah. When the Jewish people had replenished itself and rehabilitated to a degree and ready to go in again, so then the Dibur was upgraded from Hashem's communication from Vayomer to Vayidaber. Wow. Now, there are two questions that we need to consider with regards to this Rashi. I mean, aside from the idea itself, which is spellbinding. Firstly, and this is pointed out by the Mizrahi, Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi, what are we saying? Moshe is saying, originally, when things are as they should be, that's called Lashon Dibur. And these are markers for these different types of communication. The optimum way is Lashon Dibur. The B'dieved way, so to speak, the lower way, is called Amira. What can you do? So Dibur has the positive connotation, and Amira has a negative connotation. Says the Mizrahi, if you consult Rashi, more or less every other place that he talks about this, you will find the opposite is so. Amira is the term that has the positive connotation, and Dibur is the one that has the harsh connotation. And in fact, the Gemara says this in Maseches Machos, in Daf Yud. How do we know that Dibur is Lashon Kosha? As it says, the brothers came back from their terrible traumatic experiences with Yosef in Mitzrayim. They didn't know it was Yosef. Diber ha'ish adonai ha'aretz itanu koshos. Diber, he spoke to us. It was very harsh. Dibur is Lashon Kosha. Amira is Lashon Raka. It's something which is much more positive and pleasant. And here we find the opposite. When things are as they should be, the ideal is Vayidaber Hashem. If something went wrong, disaster struck, that's called Amira. I mean, that's the opposite. How can it be? But we see from a number of Mefarshim, and this is the question of the Mizrahi, but we see from many Mefarshim that when we talk about the difference between the terms Dibur and Amira, and we encounter them often, so it's important to have a good understanding of this, it's not purely a question of good news versus bad news, a good situation or a bad situation, or even positive content versus negative content. It doesn't mean that. Rather, the point about Dibur is that it's intense. Actually, grammatically, the way that Amira is said is in the Kal, Vayomer, he said. There's no Dover, there's always Yedaber, it's the PL, it's the intensive form. It's the difference between Shavar, to break, and Shiber, to smash. Vayedaber, there's something intense about it. Now, that intensity, well, all things being equal, it's easy to speak pleasantly, but if there's a confrontation, then one needs to rev up a little bit, and then it becomes Dibur. Dibur will typically accompany a confrontation, and therefore it normally expresses itself as Lashon Kosha. However, we should know, it is just as possible that specifically Dibur means something positive, because it's intense. The Haftarah of Nachamu, of next week, Daburu Alevi Yerushalayim. It's about comfort. But the Jewish people, you might take a bit of effort to comfort them. When you medaber alev someone, it means you have to put yourself out in order to make them feel better. You can't just talk conversationally. That's not going to change their mood. You have to invest effort to lift them up. That's called lidaber alibam, and it's positive. But you need to be intense in order for it to be positive. Interestingly, sometimes, for this very reason, the Amira, the easy route, can be negative. And I discovered this from a Rashi, and to my dismay, I couldn't find anyone who speaks about this Rashi, but I think it's very clear that this is what Rashi is saying. Just before a Kain kills Hevel, the prelude to that, which is very vague actually, and just says, Vayomer Kain al Hevel Achiv. Kain said something to Hevel. And then he killed him. Vayibiosim basoda, Vayokim Kain al Hevel Achiv, Vayargeo. But the prelude to that is, he said something to him. Vayomer Kain. Pasuk doesn't say what he said, which is almost unique. I think it's the only time that you have the word Vayomer without any notion of what the content is. Apparently, the content isn't important. You just need to know that he said something. Rashi says, Nichnas imo bedivrei riv umatzah kedei lahargo. He started a fight with him in order to kill him. It's a very interesting situation because Cain has decided to kill Hevel, but he can't kill him from zero. He sets up Hevel to annoy him, and then he'll kill him. Even though he planned it from the beginning. That's the way it goes. And therefore, he couldn't bring himself just in almost in cold blood. He waited for the heat of the moment, but he heated the moment up himself. And that's called Vayomer Kainel Hevel Achiv. Very interesting. And again, in Be'emek HaDavar, that's why the pasuk doesn't say what he says, because it doesn't make a difference what he says. He had a goal from this conversation, and it's incidental, whatever the content was. They could have argued about anything, it doesn't matter. But we're left with a simple shaila. The pasuk says, Vayomer Kainel Hevel Achiv. Amira is Loshon Raka. Doesn't sound like an argument. You can't start an argument that way. Wouldn't it have been more appropriate to say Vayedaber Kain El Hevel Achiv? I mean, that's Loshon Kasha. That's a marker for an argument. But I think based on what the Mefarshim are saying, we understand. And it's almost between the lines of Rashi. The way Kain felt about Hevel, it would have been harder for him to avoid an argument and speak nicely to Hevel than it was to get into an argument. When relationships are frayed to that degree, so it's the path of lesser resistance to get into an argument, because everyone's already just one step away from exploding. And therefore, on the contrary, it's an amazing point. Vayomer Kain. He just had to let nature take its course and follow the most direct path, and he would find himself in an argument, because everything Hevel said would annoy him. And that's an Amira. And it was a disaster. So it's very interesting. It's a somewhat deeper look at this very well-known understanding that Amira is Lashon Raka and Dibra is Lashon Kasha. So it's a little bit more to it than that. What's very interesting is the implications for our question is that when it comes to communication from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Dibur is the preferred option because it's more intense. That's the higher level. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks so to say in an easygoing way, that means that there isn't really that much going on, relatively speaking. And once again, therefore, the irony is that for that ponim al ponim, that intense experience, that dibur, that's the lechatchila. Amira means the message comes through, but it's not as intense. That's a demotion. And that's what Moshe had for the 38 years. And we find Sidur Beinu Bachya that it's in the Haftarah for 2 weeks ago, the first of the three-week Haftarahs, when Yirmiyahu is being initiated, really, into Nevuah, he says, Lo Yadati Daber. Lo Yadati Daber. There's many parallels, actually, between Yirmiyahu and Moshe Rabbeinu. I think the Medrash points them out. They both prophesied for 40 years, and there are parallels between them. But in this aspect, Yirmiyahu is saying, I can't compete with Moshe Rabbeinu. Lo Yadati Daber means no Navi actually ever has. There's no Vayidaber between Hashem and any other Navi. It's always Vayomer to the other Navi. Because no other Navi is on the Madrega of Moshe. And this is what Yirmiyahu is saying. Lo Yadati Daber. No one can compete with Moshe on that level. For all the others, it's Amira. Now, as much as Rashi has told us, and it's from the Gemara, that you won't find a Lashon Dibur for 38 years, just Amira. But if you look at the Psukim, it's not a secret, you will find Lashon Dibur. In fact, you will find it almost immediately after the Chet of the Meraglim, in Parshat Shalach. As soon as the episode with the Meraglim is finished, you have mitzvahs being given. The mitzvah of Challah, and various other things, Nesachim, and they begin with Dibur. So how can the Gemara say that from the time of the Meraglim, you're not going to hear Dibur for another 38 years? Rashi comments on this. We have to take note of his words. It's Rashi in his commentary on Maseches Tanis. And Rashi says that perhaps the Diburim, even if Moshe had that level of Nevuah, but he couldn't have that Nevuah when he was awake. It had to be when he was asleep. As we know, as a rule, and the Nevuah only comes when the Navi is asleep. Moshe is the only one who can receive Nevuah when he's awake. And the point is that as the Ramchal explains in the Sefer Derech Hashem, when a person is sleeping, we say it's like a 60th of death, that means that his neshama faculties are loosened somewhat from his physical existence, which allows them to be uninhibited by his physical being, and allows him to receive the message of Nevuah. Moshe doesn't need that, even when he's awake. They are free to receive exactly what needs to be received. However, for these 38 years, Rashi suggests, even for Moshe, if you see Dibur, it must have been Bechezion Laila when he was asleep. And that for Moshe is a step down, because normally he can receive Dibur even when he's awake. The Malbim has a rather different approach. And again, to be clear on our question, Rashi has told us, and it's from the Gemara, that there's no dibur for 38 years, but you find dibur within this time. So how can it be there if it's not there? The Malbim explains, and other Mefarshim as well, and it's based on an Ibn Ezra in Parshas Truma, and in fact it goes even earlier than that. There's a Yerushalmi in the second parak of Avodah Zarah, which tells us that actually Moshe received two types of nevuah. The nevuah that he received, most of which we have in the Torah, is in the form of the Tariq mitzvahs, to communicate mitzvahs to the Jewish people. But in addition to that, a Navi can receive nevuos for himself, for his own development, for his own enlightenment. There exists a channel of nevuah which isn't for other people. And that's what the Yerushalmi says. Some of the nevuahs, obviously not Tariq mitzvahs, but other insights, I mean, one can only imagine, we're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, but other areas of chachma and other areas of understanding, that Moshe receives nevuah, and it's not for public consumption, it's not for Bnei Yisrael, it's between Hashem and Moshe. You find communications which are not directly related to Tariq mitzvahs, and some of them are in the Torah. For example, the beginning of Parshas Va'era, Hashem appears to Moshe, he speaks to him. It's not about 613 mitzvahs. They haven't been given yet. He's talking to him about how Yetzias Mitzrayim will go. But it begins with Vayidaber. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe, Vayomer Lo Ani Hashem, Vayidaber Elokim Moshe, Vayomer Lo Ani Hashem, Vayotzeisi V'Yitzalti V'Gaalti, all of that. That's Hashem talking to Moshe. It's about Jewish concerns. But it's not Tariq mitzvah. Therefore, the Malbim suggests that when Moshe says, I mean, that you won't find a Lashon of Dibur, pardon me, when the Gemara says you won't find a Lashon of Dibur in these 38 years because the Jewish people have gone down, so Moshe's Nevuah goes down, that refers to the Nevuah between Hashem and Moshe. In other words, he doesn't have the luxury of communicating on that level when the Jewish people have gone down a level, because the level of the Navi depends on the level of the people. However, when it comes to Tariq mitzvahs, those are needed for all time. There can be no lessening or lowering of the madriga that those mitzvahs are communicated, and therefore all of the dibbers that you'll find in these intervening 38 years relate to mitzvahs, but there's no dibbers that are Hashem speaking to Moshe about anything else. There it goes down. And moreover, as Shlomo Fischer points out in his drushas, the point of the Gemara is only borne out if you say that it's Moshe's personal nevuas that went down in a level. Because if you say that Hashem didn't speak to him with regards to things for the Jewish people, that's not a reflection of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a reflection of the Jewish people again. If Moshe is purely the Navi as a messenger for the Jewish people, Hashem has nothing to say to them, so he's not going to speak to Moshe. But you can't say that, you see, the level of Moshe has gone down. It must be in things even that related to Moshe himself, his level went down. And that's where we say that there's no Dibur, only Amira. So these are some concerns, again, quite weighty discussions, really, the nature of Sefer Devarim and the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, these are the discussions that open Chumash Devarim. And from there, I would like to devote some time, the rest of the Shir, to Inyan HaDiyoma, to matters of Tisha B'Av. Of course, the more perspective we have on it, the more we get out of it. And there is a Medrash. It's in the Psicha of Eicha Rabasi, the introduction to the Medrash Rabbah on Eicha. And the Medrash comments on a pasuk in Yirmiyah. So the pasuk says, it's in Yirmiyah, Perik Nun Aleph, Boshnu ki shamanu cherpa. It's obviously a very unpleasant pasuk, it's a very difficult pasuk. Boshnu, we're ashamed, we've heard cherpa. Kisasa klima paneinu, disgrace has covered our face. Kivau zorim al mikdashay beis Hashem, for strangers have come to the mikdashay, to the temples of beis Hashem. And the Medrash explains, as is often the case, the phrases of the pasuk are attached to certain events, and therefore the first phrase, boshnu kishamanu cherpa, that busha, says the Medrash, Zeshivasa Vatamas. That was the first busha, that was the Chet HaEgel. The second phrase, Kisusok klima paneinu, the disgrace covers us. Zet Tisha B'Av, that's the Meraglim. And these two events, of course, frame the 3 weeks. Tisha B'Av Sabbatamas is the beginning, that's the Cheta Egel. The Cheta Meraglim is Tisha B'Av, and that's the beginning and the end. Kibo Uzorim al Mikdashe Beis Hashem, Mikdashe in the plural refers to the destruction of both Batei Mikdash. And that's the Medrash. And the point is, as the theme that emerges, as the Beis Halevi points out in Parshas Bo, is that it seems that the Medrash is identifying two events and then relating them to the destruction of the two Batei Mikdash. And what the Medrash seems to be saying is that the two Batei Mikdash were somehow impacted by these two events respectively. As if to say the first event is the Chet HaEgel, and that led to the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash in some way. Ultimately, the second event of the Chet HaMeraglim, that led to the Churban of the second Beis HaMikdash. And what Meforshim at that point begin to try and work out, based on this analysis of the Beis HaLevi, is how does the situation of the first Beis HaMikdash versus the second, how does that parallel the Chet HaEgel as opposed to the Chet HaMeraglim? As far as we're concerned, you know, from a distance, they're all disasters. How does each one assume a certain color, certain characteristic? There is an amazing comment. It's in the Talmud Yerushalmi, in Maseches Yuma. It's talking from retrospectively from the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. And it's comparing, in some way, the extent of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash to the first. And it says, Avoseinu he'eviru es hatikra. Our ancestors, meaning looking back at the generation of the first Beis HaMikdash, the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, they removed the roof. Now, of course, the whole Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. But somehow it's qualifying almost or diminishing the extent of the Churban. The first Beis HaMikdash could be described as the roof was taken off the Beis HaMikdash. Aval Anu, this is now the second generation, that is to say of the second Beis HaMikdash, it quotes the Pasuk in Tehillim, Oru, Oru Ad HaYisod Ba. They dug up the very foundations of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Yerushalmi is saying, for us, they're both the same. So roughly the same thing happened at different times. And physically, they are largely the same. But conceptually, the Yerushalmi is saying the destruction was worse the second time round. And how is that expressed? The first destroyed the roof. It's almost as if the Beis HaMikdash itself is still there, which it wasn't. And the second just completely uprooted the whole thing from its foundations. What are we to make of this, especially as, again, logistically the two are the same? Now, one of the well-known statements of the Gemara with regards to the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash, it's a Gemara in Maseches Yoma and Daf Tes Amud Beis, it compares the faults, and it identifies them. The first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed as a result of the Shalosh Averos Chamuros, those three cardinal Averos, Avodah Zarah, Gilei Raos, and Shfichas Damim, the three worst. What about the second? Sinas Chinam, baseless hatred. That already is a Chiddush. And then the Gemara goes on to say, just that we don't avoid this point, Lelamedcha, Shesinas chinam shekula kushala shaveiros chamuros. If you do the math, consider the results. What those three aveiros succeeded in doing for the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, sinas chinam alone succeeded in doing in the second. And again, if you know the history of the time, there is more going on than sinas chinam in the time of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. But this is it. The Gemara sweeps over the whole thing and says sinas chinam. That was the problem. Now, if we're familiar with this statement of the Gemara, perhaps we are, Sinas Chinam, it's equal in severity to those three Averos, we have to take care not to forget to ask why and how. How can it be so? They're all Averos, but how can it approximate those three terrible Averos? Moreover, as the Gemara continues and really presses this point, sinas chinam, one could say, is even worse than all of the others put together. Why would we say it's even worse? I mean, each one led to a destruction. It says the Gemara, yes, but consider that after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, it came back after 70 years. The destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash is still here. And the Gemara says that. And the still of the Gemara is a very different still than it is now. Which means it's worse. And the Gemara asks this question, which is worse? And the answer of the Gemara is, Tanu Einechem Bebira. Look in the Beis HaMikdash. There's your answer. They came back after 70 years for the first one, and until further notice for the second one, there's your answer. But again, how can it be? Now, one of the statements of the Gemara, which is often not quoted, even as these other aspects are, the three Averis Chamuros, and versus Sinas Chinam, a part that's sometimes left out, and maybe because we don't know what to do with it, because the Gemara says something which is astounding about the first generation. Rishoim hayu. They were wicked people. That is not yet a chiddush. They were involved in these terrible things. Ela, says the Gemara, shetalu bitchonam b'Hashem. But they had trust in Hashem. That is probably the last thing we would expect it to hear. As a kind of almost like a redeeming feature or a silver lining. Avodah Zorah, Gila Reishis, Bichos Damim, but they had bitachon. And the Gemara seems to be saying it in order to explain why it is that it wasn't that bad. For us, it's almost impossible to conceive of, to talk about doing all these things, and still they have bitachon. And somehow that counts for something. It can exist and it counts for something. The Vilna Gaon, who discusses this, notes that if we're comparing and contrasting these two generations of Churban, and you say that for all of their faults, and they don't get bigger as faults than those three Averas, nonetheless the first generation had Bitachon, it means that really, at the root of it, the problem with the second generation, which is called Sinas Chinam, is that they didn't have bitachon. Because if they both have bitachon, then why is one treated differently than the other? It's highlighted by the first, and it's absent in the second. But now the question is, the Gemara explicitly says the problem with the second generation, second Churban, was sinas chinam. Implicitly we infer that they didn't have bitachon. That's a separate thing. Says the Vilna Gaon, it's not a separate thing. It's one and the same. This is the root of Sinas Chinam. And now the Gaon, of course, is going to proceed to do something which on paper sounds impossible by definition. Sinas Chinam means hatred for no reason. Chinam for no reason. And now says the Gaon, I'll explain to you the reason for Sinas Chinam. But by its very name, it says that it's there for no reason. But of course, nothing happens for no reason. When it's called Sinas Chinam, it means it's for no good reason. But there is a reason. That reason is dysfunctional. That cause is a problem. But it is there. You need to identify it. Says the Gaon, it's such a strange thing to dislike others categorically, automatically, as a matter of policy. Where does it come from? Says the Gaon, if someone is a threat to me, I will find myself bearing ill will towards them. I'll be mistrustful of them, suspicious, and malignant towards them. If they're not a threat to me, no reason. If they aren't a threat to me, but I perceive them as being a threat, I will bear ill will towards them for no reason, meaning for no good reason. A person surveys the people around them, and the reason why he's suspicious of them, and the reason why he's ill will towards them is because in his heart he's thinking, what could they be taking that might otherwise be mine? That's the jungle of life. Imeina nili mili. I've got to take care of myself. The more people there are in the equation, the more people there are who are potentially taking something away from me. were it to be the case that this person was assured that no one's going to take anything that belongs to him, whatever he needs, he'll get. He acts responsibly, appropriately, whatever he needs, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of him. All of a sudden, he's released. You see how differently people act when they're around a table and it's each man for himself. There's a certain edge. Instinct takes over at the smorgasbord. Because there's finite resources and there's a number of competitors and anything goes. The very same people, half an hour, they're sitting around the table. Kiyada melech. Everyone's magnanimous, everyone's full of goodwill. Why? Because they don't have to take care of themselves. There's nice people called waiters who are taking care of them. And the feeling is everyone will get what they want, and therefore they even give first to the person next to them, who's the very person they pushed out the way on the way to the table. The same people. There's only one thing that changed, is there a sense that whatever I need, I will get. And therefore, says the Vilna Gaon, Sinas Chinam is a symptom of a person who lives without any sense that anyone's looking out for him. And therefore he's got to look out for himself. As soon as that's true, he's on edge. And anyone who gets in his way is a threat and has to be dealt with accordingly. And everyone else is potentially a threat and he relates to them accordingly. Someone who has bitochon, says the Gaon, no one's threatening them. And natural goodwill can come in. And that's why when the Gemara says that the problem with the second generation was sinas chinam, and we imply that they were lacking in bitochon, it's the same thing. It's chinam, it's because it's for no good reason. They should never have felt alone like that. They should never have felt that these people will ultimately take what should be theirs. Where was the bitochon? The earlier generation had bitochon. And what a thing it is to say. Because no one is belittling the three largest crimes imaginable in Torah. Avodah Zarah, Gilah Ra'ah, and Shpichas Damim. No one's saying that those are not problems. That is bitachon help. Bitachon means if you have the Jewish core of bitachon, you can deal with those problems. You can recover from them. They won't go away by themselves, but you can recover from them. But someone who's lacking bitachon is lacking the heart of Judaism. And aside from anything else, it's worthwhile pondering, reflecting, that this is almost the ultimate synthesis, really, between the two domains of Ben Adam Lamokam and Ben Adam Lachaveira, which we spoke about a couple of weeks ago. Often, superficially, we see them as being in competition. Are you a Ben Adam Lachaveira person, Ben Adam Lamokam person? Is there room for both of them? And of course, that's not true, but ultimately, not only is there room for both of them, they energize each other, they empower each other. Here, sinas chinam are the two words that say everything about bad relationships ben adam lechaveiro. And along comes the Gaon and says, and that all happens because of a lack in ben adam lamokum. Person was developed in their sense of bitochon, their ben adam lechaveiro would look very different. That's important to know. That's why the Gemara makes a somewhat obscure comment there, again in Maseches Yuma, Daf Tes. Again, talking about the first Chorban, the second Chorban. Tovat Tzipornam Shel Rishonim, Mikresam Shel Achronim. The claws of the first generation were better than the stomach of the second generation. Which is about as mystifying as it gets. What's the meaning of this evaluation? Says the Gaon, we know that in order for an animal to be kosher, it needs two kosher simonim. It's got to have split hooves, it's got to chew the cud. And there's something kosher about those simonim, actually, says the Gaon. The split hooves mean that when it reaches out and draws back, if there's a split, that means it doesn't take everything. If the hoof is sealed, nothing can be left. And that represents a lack of bitocho. He has to grab everything, either through a sealed hoof or through claws, which sink themselves into the whole thing and drag it back. The notion of leaving something untaken, you have what you need, take some and leave some, that's a split hoof. Chewing the cud is also in its way, in a very primal way, it's an act of bitachon. Because when an animal chews the cud, essentially it's saying that It has what it needs. It doesn't constantly need to be looking further. What else is there? Chewing the cud is the animal version of sameach bechelko. Does he need to eat again? No, he has. Now, halachically, of course, there's no such thing as a half kosher lunch. That means that both of simonim need to be positive. But they do represent this idea that they're kosher signs. The problem with the first generation was in the clause. That is to say, it was on the outside. It was in the things that they did. If one may say, their claws were treif, but their stomach was kosher. Because the Gemara says that they still held on, as strange as it sounds, to a sense of bitachon. The second was the other way around. They may have been involved in many more good things, but the stomach was treif. Inside, there was no bitachon. And the Gemara says it's another way of expressing the same idea. The claws of the first ones were better than the stomach of the second. Nothing should be treif, but better a treif on the outside than on the inside. So these are important discussions when we talk about sinas chinam. It is absolutely bound together with the idea of bitachon. And this brings us to the chet of the meraglim. For as we said, the two destructions correspond respectively to the chet ha'egel and chet ha'meraglim. So the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the roots of that somehow are in the chet of the meraglim. Well, as we know, and it's probably the easiest way to understand or to explain more correctly, what happened with the meraglim was clearly in the area of bitachon. When they went in, which was their hishtadlus to send people in, and that's okay, they came back and they said it's impossible to conquer the land. They can't. They're too strong. But of course the question is, well, too strong for whom? For you? Maybe. But why are you talking about it as if you're the ones who are going to have to conquer them by yourselves? And if Hashem helps you, are they too strong for him? And this is what Yehoshua and Kalev are remonstrating with them. Hashem is with us, we don't have to worry. But really, they are worried. But why are they worried, the Jewish people at large? Somehow, a feeling took hold of them that Hashem wasn't with them, or wouldn't be with them. They lost that sense of connection. If they had it, b'shem Hashem, naseh v'natzliach. If they don't have it, us against them, forget about it. Which means the ultimate question of yes or no, can we go in, depends on, well, who's going in? Just us? We can't do it. With Hashem, we can. And what depends? How do we view ourselves going in? And therefore, on some level, the Jewish people were traumatized by the notion of going in. They felt somehow that Hashem wouldn't be with them. And what's very interesting is, of course, this is the root, this lack of bitachon that accompanied, we're oversimplifying, but that accompanied the chet of the meraglim, is the root of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, the second sin led to the second destruction. Because the second destruction was also ultimately about lack of bitachon. And moreover, as the Marsha points out, the Jewish people cried. That's how severely they were impacted by the notion of being abandoned by Hashem. That was clear to them that that's what was happening. Vayivku kalam balailahu. That night was Tisha B'Av, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Atem bechisem bechi shel chinam. You cried over nothing. And that day became a day of Bechi L'Doros, which is Tisha B'Av, a day of crying for all generations. Why was it a crying for nothing? Because there was no reason to cry. They cried because they felt abandoned, but there was no reason to feel that way. They'd lost their sense of bitachon. And what's very interesting is, I don't know if there are many conditions or characteristics that are referred to with this word chinam. To my knowledge, there's only two. Bechi of chinam and sinas chinam. Because it's the same chinam. It's the same no reason. the very same chinam of their crying because they should never have felt abandoned that they should have to cry. It's the chinam of sinas chinam. You should never feel that no one's looking after you, that you have to be suspicious of everyone else potentially taking from your assets. So these discussions of sinas chinam are important to get to the root of it, and I think it should give us maybe a deeper appreciation, especially for events as they're surrounding us now. Normally, in better years, you have to prepare for Tisha B'Av. How do you prepare? You read history books. Today, you don't need to read a history book. You turn on the radio, and you are in Tisha B'Av. And important always to remember, again, superficially we disconnect them and get waylaid a little bit, get diverted. Some people have an issue with, as they approach Tisha B'Av, I'm not sure what I should be thinking about. So apparently, or officially, it's about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, which I never saw, and it was a long time ago, and I don't know if I can bring myself so much to miss it. I never knew it. I'm sure it was amazing. And in the meanwhile, there's so many other things that are much closer to our time. But is it wrong? Are you missing the point of Tisha B'Av? So Rashi tells us in his Perush to Divrei Hayomim that neither of them are wrong, because it's all the same thing. If the Beis HaMikdash was here and the Jewish people were as they should be, none of these other things would happen. As the Jewish people spiral downwards into all of their tzoras, everything ultimately is an emanation of the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash. And that's why, although it's a larger discussion, but just to mention it, that was part of the question of whether there should be a separate day for any tragic event, including Yom HaShoah. And many Rabbonim, based on this Rashi, actually said, it's got to be marked, but we may be missing something if we don't mark it on Tisha B'Av, as if to say, well, where did that come from? The Jewish people shouldn't have a thing like that. They should be in their land with the Beis HaMikdash. The Pasuk in Eicha says, Bachotivke Balaila. Bachotivke is a chain of events. The first Bechi leads to another Bechi, and they're all rooted back. So on the contrary, I think it's an important perspective, as we shouldn't feel that we're betraying Tisha B'Av by thinking about other tzaras, more recent tzaras, even current tzaras of the Jewish people. That's not avoiding the issue of Tisha B'Av. These are branches of Tisha B'Av. And the more we appreciate the depth of the problem of sinas chinam, which is identified as the one single cause that is equal and outweighs all of those other averas, the more we should appreciate that any gain in reversing that direction is enormous. It's the pathway back to Geula. For some of us, we feel that the only gain, so to speak, of these recent events is the coming together of the Jewish people. And of course, the ultimate tragedy is that it takes tragedy to bring the Jewish people together. But at a certain point, a person will feel, well, okay, tragedy happened, the Jewish people are together. Is that enough? And that's the point where we need to be sure that we are not underestimating the infinite value of what it means for the Jewish people to be together, because it's one of our greatest assets. And therefore, we mourn for the fact that it's difficult circumstances that bring us together, but we need to appreciate what it means. And hopefully, as we adopt and integrate the reversal of sinas chinam, so that's our bracha, that we shouldn't take a tragedy in order for us to be together. But that involves letting bitachon back in. That involves reinforcing our sense of connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which then connects us with the rest of the Jewish people. And that feeling is what will lead us back to the Geula and the Mitzvah Hashem. These tzaras should be the last of our tzaras. We should find ourselves very soon at the time of the Geula Shalema B'mehir B'Yameinu.